Hey, beautiful souls, I'm Colleen, and this is the Hair Healer Podcast. On my show, my guests and I untangle our web of relationships as children, partners, employees, parents, and strip away the labels that define our identity. On each episode, my guests and I open our souls and start a dialogue in order to span this gap, create a spiritual bond, and cultivate deep interpersonal connections. So before we jump into this episode with David Newman, you guys might remember from episode 7, season 1. But anyways, David Newman from season 1. I'm super excited. I just want to let you guys know it might sound a little bit different than the rest of season 2. This is the second episode I recorded for season 2. And as you guys know, I got the Rode Coaster, super amazing equipment. But for some reason, we didn't end up bringing it to David's house when I recorded inside his house. So I think we had just gotten it or we were missing a part. I cannot remember. So it sounds a little bit echoey and not as big machine-y. That's the wrong word. I know. So I just want to let you guys know that it does sound a little bit different than the rest of the season, but it's just as good. I promise you. I love David. He has so much spiritual wisdom. He's amazing. So without further ado, let's hop into this episode with David Newman. Welcome everyone to the Hair Healer Podcast, season 2, episode 2. We were currently recording on location in Narberth with my good friend, not former friend, I accidentally said that in a pre-recording, David Newman, who you guys might remember from season 1, episode 10. How are you?
I'm great. Good to see you, Colleen the Hair Healer.
Welcome, welcome. Before this, we gave him a fabulous haircut. What does everyone think?
And I love it.
Do you love it?
Especially in this light.
I know. And it was good to have the haircut because, again, our conversations just flow. That's why I had you on season 1. And it was good to get all of our little, you know, conversations.
Our political conversation out of the way.
And then we could come on here and bring you guys the spiritual conversation and bring you hope and life and everything.
Because that's what we're really all about.
That is what we're really all about. So, David, how do you feel today? How do you feel?
Lighter.
Do you feel lighter?
I feel lighter.
After Absolutely. The haircut?
Yeah. We took in the wave.
We took in the wave. Yeah. One of the things I did, David, is a sacred heart musician, a musician of spirituality. And one of the things I've done for the last 24 hours, which I didn't do the first episode last year, is I just listened to your music on Spotify for the last 24 hours, just channeled into your words, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what I'm currently learning in the last year. And you helped me. You made a mantra for me is how the frequency of our voice works and how even as what I'm doing, I realize I tap into the voice, the voice, that's what I tap into. And like, totally. That is what you teach.
It is. Each person has a frequency and in general, and that frequency, one of the ways in which it's channeled and expressed and communicated is through the sound of a person's voice.
Wow.
And so many people don't necessarily really tune into that frequency and often have stories around the sound of their own voice, particularly when they're singing. Somebody may have said, hey, you can't carry a tune or, you know, this or that. You're not a singer.
Did you have any of that you had to fight?
I did. I had a sibling who used to say, tell me my voice only sounded good to me.
Aww. Yeah.
But I've heard so many stories from so many people in my workshops and classes that I've taught who tell me stories. One that sticks out is a man who I do in some of my workshops, I'll do this exercise where I'll invite everybody to sing solo or chant solo.
Oh.
And I'll teach it to them and then everybody has that opportunity.
In front of everyone.
In front of everybody.
Powerful.
It is very. I didn't realize just, you know, how people felt about that until I went surfing for the first time.
And what happened?
Well, I was just so terrified. And I thought, oh, wow, this must be how people feel when they're invited. I never force anybody to sing with anybody else. But this one man didn't want to do it. So he asked me if instead I would sing a duet with him. So the two of us sang together. And then at lunch after the morning session, he told me a story about 60 years ago when he was a young boy. He had prepared for this performance in his school, and the choir director came over to him right before the performance and whispered into his ear. He said, move your lips, but don't make a sound during the performance. And he said, so it had been 16 years since he actually shared his voice in public.
Oh my God, that's so heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. So people have a lot of anxiety around their voices. But the other piece of it is just the practice of learning to what your voice sounds like and enjoying and appreciating the uniqueness, because no two voices sound the same.
No, and it took me to this podcast and having to hear my voice over and over again 48 times. And more than that, there's 48 episodes, did I actually start to like my voice. And my sister and I sound identical. So you hate the sound of your own voice. And I always say the story. The first episode she listened to, she called me up. She's like, why does your voice sound like that? I said, because you sound identical to me and you don't want to hear your own voice.
Well, there's another piece, and that is that your voice will sound different on a recording than it sounds to you as it reverberates within your own skull. Wow. So what you're hearing on that recording is not going to be the same thing as what you're hearing when you speak yourself.
Wow.
So everybody is a little taken back when they hear kind of a replica of their voice. Even somebody like John Lennon did not like the sound of his own voice.
He did it?
Which is one of the reasons why he put all those effects. He had the producer put all those, like on Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, those effects on his voice, because he was uncomfortable hearing the natural sound of his own voice.
Wow.
So it's a natural,
I never knew that.
It's a natural phenomena for people to be a little surprised when they hear it back. That's why I tell people when they're recording in the studio for the first time, just get ready. Just, you know? It may not be exactly what you anticipated hearing.
Like that for you, the first time you heard yourself in the recording?
Yeah, it makes you uncomfortable. You know, at moments, yeah, it sounds beautiful, but it's unnatural to hear your own
voice. How'd you fight through that?
Except inside of your own.
How'd you fight through that? Just keep listening like I had to do over and over again? Like, how did you adapt to your voice?
You keep listening, and it's a practice. It's a self-acceptance, like any other form of self-acceptance. Yeah. But, you know, the reason why we celebrate, for instance, beautiful singers and rock stars is because we're celebrating the sound, their creativity, and the sound of their own voice. But really what we're celebrating is the way in which their uniqueness as a soul is able to come through them. And so my work is about saying, well, it also comes through you too. The uniqueness of your soul comes through your voice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It really does. Now, when you were on season one on that episode, you were in sort of, when we talked, a life transition, right? Your career was transiting. You were just like, so many things were different. Where are you now? And I know some changes have happened with teaching. And where are you now from there? Do you still feel as lost or as guided? Or,
well, I wouldn't say lost, but I think life in general, you're always in a constant state of change and flux. But sometimes in life, that's more exaggerated. Yeah. Sometimes you feel like, wow, I've stepped onto a path, or I'm on a course. And that was true for me for about 20 years. I was very one-pointed and focused on a particular journey of recording albums and touring and performing and teaching. And so it felt very natural. But then I sort of felt complete in that journey on some level and felt like I had finished a certain chunk of my life's work. And so I was on the sort of end of a certain curve of my journey when COVID came. So it wasn't, COVID for me was kind of uniquely kind of the universe saying, okay, we're really done now.
Yeah.
You know,
we're
really done now. And it's time to just take a rest and it's time to be more so. So for me, I really have a lot of compassion for those people that were sort of on the other side, you know, up the spectrum. They were just about ready to get out there and tour and perform and whatever that is. And I can imagine how disappointing that must be for them. But so for me, it was a rest that I don't know whether I would have completely given myself 6 months of just being here. So it was one of those silver linings of this time for me.
Did you know that when your tour canceled, when you couldn't do anything more, did you feel like, did you know that in that moment, or was there like sadness?
There was both, but there was a little bit of a sense of relief. Like, I don't have to fly to India and fly here and go there and pack my suitcase and get back on the plane and, you know, all the rigmarole of touring. Because when you're a touring musician, you know, you really love interfacing with your community and your audience and playing with the other musicians. But then there's everything else that you need to do
to get to that moment.
You know, just constantly uprooting your life and that sense of destabilization of getting back on the road. Plus, I have a 9-year-old daughter, so it's been extraordinary for me just to be here all the time for her. It's just enabled us to go much deeper.
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah. She's a rock star following in your footsteps, right?
She does. Her thing is Broadway.
Oh,
Broadway singing.
Oh,
and so she likes to perform in musicals.
Oh my God,
love
her.
She played young Elsa in a musical of Frozen.
Aww.
And she was in Annie, among others. And then during this 6 months, she said to me one day, she said, "Daddy, I want to learn the sitar." Now, I'm a musician, and I know that the sitar is a very complex, it's an Indian instrument, very complex. And so I just kind of took in, you know, her request, and I didn't do anything about it. And she said it to me again, and I kind of went, okay. And then she sent me a text from her mom's house, and it said, "No, Daddy, I'm really serious about playing the sitar."
Wow.
So I contacted the local Indian restaurant because there was a sitar player who I knew who played there. They gave me his number, and we got her a lesson. And for the last 3 months, she's been studying the sitar. She now has a sitar, and she goes for an hour a week, and she's completely devoted to the instrument, and it's really incredible to see. So yeah, she's got this rock star persona,
so
but
cute.
She's now, she sits there with this big, beautiful sitar and plays Indian music, and she loves her teacher loves her, and they sit on the porch and drink chai and play sitar. She's, you know, amazing.
Oh my God, that is so cool.
It is really, really amazing. One day she, you know, and I was driving in the car, and she said, "Daddy, are you disappointed with me?" And I said, "Well, why Tulsi?" Her name's Tulsi. She said, "Well, you know, I know you're a guitar player, and I do like the guitar, but it's just not my thing. You know, the sitar is really my thing." And I said, "No, of course not.
Oh, I think it's cool that she followed in your footsteps, and almost particularly with your kind of, that's a big instrument in your music, isn't it?
I never played. I always brought someone. My Eastern orientation was always through the chanting, and then I had musicians who played Indian instruments, but I've always been more of a Western guitar player, ukulele, piano, play a little harmonium.
Do you have a favorite, or all of them sort of want
guitar.
To enter? Really?
Oh, I mean, I love the ukulele. I always have it on the couch to play, but guitar is my first love.
That's your first love,
yeah.
And that's where you feel more in tune?
Yeah, there's something kinesthetic about either finger picking it or strumming it, and then that relationship between the sound of the instrument and my voice. And, you know, it was interesting. You ask about letting go when COVID hit, and my last tour was in Florida. And when I got to Florida, I opened up my guitar case for my first rehearsal, and my guitar was just completely cracked all the way through.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And so when I came back, it was like, well, maybe that's the end of a chapter for me. I do need to take it in to see if it can get put back together.
Wow. With you, something I love about you, and just in that moment I heard it, it's just like, you're an instant acceptor. Acceptance is like, and you do have such an energy of peace of just like, and everything in your life has flowed just right there. So many people would have taken it as like trying to hold on to their dream or trying to hold on to something. And you were just like,
yeah, my band looked at me and they're like, aren't you going to like get upset about this? My guitar is in two pieces. Does anybody else have a guitar? And my bass player had this great guitar. It's called a Breedlove. That's the brand. And I played it through the tour, and,
how do you teach someone, I guess it's not that simple, radical acceptance? How did you teach that in yourself? Just, I guess for me, it's coming more and more, but it's a series of unfortunate events that force you to it.
It's a practice.
It's a practice.
It's a practice. And these are muscles that one strengthens. And the reason why I feel that I've become more effective at surrender and acceptance is that I've had a long enough life. You know, in December, I'll be turning 57.
Wow, you look 47, 37.
Thank
you.
I'll go with 37.
Yeah.
Still, yeah. but in any event, you know, I always tell people, if you knew how old you really were,
I know,
you'd really be tripping.
Wow. share that. Yes.
So, so I've had the opportunity to see that if something doesn't go the way I want, that there's always a better plan. So I've been able to see that in action enough times to know, okay, I'm not going to resist. I'm not going to fight. It's just not worth it.
The plan was always better. The universe's plan.
Plan's always better. Exactly. So, I mean, right about now, in terms of more holistically and globally with everything that's going on in the world, I do have to practice what I preach and say, okay, this is just what's supposed to be, you know. But in my own, you know, because I am empathically, you know, feel what people are going through. So it brings up a lot in me, but within my own personal life, it's a pretty natural reflex.
Do you know what's happening to me over COVID during this time is I went out to eat a lot so I could support people when you're allowed. But all the food just always kind of felt so, like, the food was sad, like, because everyone there was sad. I could feel the businesses, I could feel the waiters and waitresses, I could feel everyone, and sure, I could feel in the food. So when I'd eat the food, I was just like, the food, no matter how good the restaurant was, the food was sad.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it breaks my heart. So it's interesting even just how, I don't know where I was going to go with that. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, and that's our practice, is to transform, whether it's sadness or yes, anxiety, and, you know, like, digest it and turn it into something else.
Something else.
But sometimes, yeah, it is overwhelming and it is challenging to process, you know, all that sort of the collective, you know, panic and fear and sadness and anxiety that's going around. And so
how do you, yeah, because I know for me, sometimes I get home and I'm just like, I do all this stuff, but I, like, sometimes we even forget to get out of everyone's energy that comes on to us throughout the day. Like, how do you, especially right now, clear all that when you get home, clear those feelings, clear everyone's pain? And
first thing is just remembering that it's not mine, you know, yeah, that it doesn't belong to me. That's just an awareness to just go, okay, wow, this doesn't feel like me. And so, and I have various ways, whether it's through mantras, which is big for me, obviously.
Yeah.
Through yoga practice. I love getting in nature. One of the practices that I've really loved that I've been into over the last months is the practice called earthing or grounding.
Oh, yes. Virgo rising, Virgo moon. Please get me into the ground and put the one where you really put your feet in there.
Yeah, you just, I go for walks in nature with my bare feet, and I find that a great way to heal, just in nature in general, but that in particular. And, you know, like Palo Santo and sage, and talking about food, one of the ways I like to ground and heal is just, you know, talking about my daughter again, she's a 9-year-old foodie. So, you know, through these last 6 months, I would say, okay, Tulsi, how about we order in tonight? And she would look at me and say, no, Dad, will you cook for me? And
she'd want you to cook for her?
Every now, I mean, I've really honed in my cooking skills. And I love cooking for her. So it's really an expression of my love for her. So just cooking and putting my energy into the food and then eating the food.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the other ways that I like to ground. Just, I would say in general, it's just getting in touch with the earth energy. You know, for me, and mantra is that too.
Do you garden?
That is like on my list.
Me too.
I feel like I need to know somebody who I can apprentice under, because, you know, as a kid growing up, it just wasn't part of what my parents taught me or my brother to do. And I've just never found it, but I really want to. Yeah.
I really just want to do it. I want to take care of a plant, garden all my fruits and vegetables, but I kill it all. But I'm keeping a cactus for a second time alive.
Yeah, same. I have my these snake plants in here, and I have these succulents have some plants outside, and I have a koi pond here.
Love the koi fish.
And there's water lilies in there, so I feed the fish. I have a dog. I have a cat. So that's my way of just being a nurturer, you know, making sure all the animals are taken care of and the fish are fed.
You're a nurturer. And
the dog. Cancer mom.
Oh, yeah, duh.
Cancer mom.
Duh. You know? Aw, that's a lucky daughter. Yeah. Now, for those of you who are not or haven't listened to season 1, I just remember, let's talk about how we met. Because we met in an interesting way. He is my client, but he wasn't a long-term client, but he was a long-term client of the salon. But do you remember that day?
Well, at that moment, I wasn't
long-term. No, you weren't ever.
I had gone to the salon some time ago, but I was just walking down Narberth.
And it was a Sunday that was closed. I was, you know, in my Sunday best, and I was actually recording an episode, like the second person for season 1 there, and I walked out, and you were walking up, and you were just like, do you work there? Can I cut your hair? And then something like that. And then you got in my chair. I think you made an appointment that week, and we instantly, you like knew so much about astrology, and it was just like this instant connection. And then a month later, we recorded the first episode, and we've been great friends since then.
That's the magic moments of life.
Magic. It was a Sunday. I wasn't even supposed to be. I mean, I was to record, but walked out and
There was, and you're with your friend.
Brad,
who I, believe it or not, I never forget a face. And I told you that I cut his hair once years ago. The other day I was driving somewhere in Haverford and it was like a weird, like the construction. He literally pulled in front of me in his work truck, his electric. And he's, I was just like,
right? Oh, I know him.
Yeah. Then he wouldn't know me. And I was like, interesting. And I'm going to see David in a week.
I love that. Yeah. Again, those are magic moments. It just shows you how it's all connected. And the beauty of life, the practice, is to see that every moment is a magical moment. Some moments are especially magic.
Yeah.
So it's always nice to take note of them and go, hey, look at that.
Yeah. Do you know what I've been trying to do this summer? I've had a lot of amazing moments, right? And it's so hard, but just like, oh, knowing that some of the, I don't know if I'm going to say this all right, but knowing some of the most magical moments are like, And just like really being able to enjoy it in the moment, understanding now that there are like life's in series of moments, right? And knowing that you may not always get these magical moments. And absolutely. This summer I just had a lot where I was just like, okay, this can never be again. So I'm just going to really enjoy this moment to the best of my ability and not focus on anything outside.
Totally. I heard a Zen monk once say it this way. Let me see if I can rehash it. Said something like this. You take life, like just feeling the way we're feeling now, you kind of take that for granted. But then you get a toothache, and but then when the toothache is gone, you're back to this, but you're just so grateful for this because you don't have a toothache.
Yes.
You know, it's almost, you know, remembering in this moment that, oh, okay, wow, like I'm healthy and, you know, and I have these gifts in my life and do you understand
the
distinction? It's like something now, like I'm spending a lot of my time really thinking and praying for my friends on the West Coast who are going through these horrific fires.
Do you have a lot of friends are they evacuating?
And some of them are just living at home and breathing in this terrible air. You know, some of them can't even walk out their front door.
That's scary.
So, you know, like when I sit on my porch in the mornings and it's just a beautiful day and the air quality is horrible out there and the air quality is just nice and I can take a deep breath. I'm like, all right, it may not be this way tomorrow. You know, and certainly what we're going through now has shown us that you just can't take anything for granted.
And that's why I always tell people you shouldn't worry, because most of the time the things I worry about never happen, right? But the things I should end up worrying about, I don't see coming.
That's true.
I do not see coming whatsoever.
That's that old phrase, you know, my friend said that his mother, you know, said, you know, worrying works because nothing I ever worried about came true.
That's right.
You know?
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. So, but there are better ways than making things not happen.
Were you ever
to worry about them?
Were you ever a worrier? I don't imagine. But like,
yeah, I still do. You know, I worry about stuff. I mean, when you have a child, you know how it is.
I know. How do you?
But you know, I again, when we were talking about, hey, this is me, this isn't me. When that comes forward, I am able to witness it with neutrality and say, okay, there's worrying happening, and then disengage from it, and you know, through my breath and
I was gonna say, what do you do?
Come back into my own center. But it arises.
What's your mantra to come back into your center?
I have a bunch of different mantras.
I know, you have so many.
But I have a few that are my go-tos.
Which I want to add, if you didn't listen to season one, you got your first mantra at 11?
I was 10? Early teen.
Early teen?
I think it was 1973. I was 10, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I was good.
Yeah,
remember
that is, I'm very impressed.
That's pretty good.
It was TM, Transcendental Meditation. It was the first mantra that I ever learned. Right?
And I can't remember in that what you had said. I don't even know if I asked you that, but as a kid, as a 10-year-old, right? Most would think, be like, this is silly. Did you instantly just attach to that?
I was the only one in my family that did. Everybody
really?
Else. My whole family got initiated and they were over it very fast. And funny that my mother, who was a divorce attorney at that time, she was representing a man who was going through a divorce whose last name was almost exactly like the mantra that she was given.
Ooh.
So whenever she would say the mantra, she would just think of this stressful court case involved in. So that was an unfortunate karma in that way. But I was really the only one who stuck with it in the family. And yeah, it really helped me a lot.
And now here you are years later from 10 teaching it to other people. Yeah. How did you get into teaching mantras now? That's a COVID. That was a COVID creation or before?
No. I've been teaching mantras now for a long time, over 20 years,
wow.
but it was sort of, woven into my performance and my music, mm-hmm. My musical career, but always like when I would travel somewhere, because my music embodies mantras. So when I would go somewhere and perform, very often I would also teach a workshop as part of that.
Oh, cool.
So I've been teaching them for a long time, but now they've taken on kind of a different quality and maybe a deeper import. The way I've been telling people in my community that for 20 years, I felt like I was cooking for people through the music and the mantras that I, you know, composed. And now I feel like I'm teaching people to cook. I mean, I always have taught people how to cook, but it's sort of deepened because I'm not out
now
there performing.
Now you have a course.
Well, I've always had a course.
Oh, you always had?
Yeah, but this is just different in the sense that it's... how could I describe the distinction? The mantras that I typically taught as part of my travels were connected to opening one's heart and connecting spiritually through meditation. Now I'm supporting people in some more specific ways to use mantras since people are going through so much now. So a little bit more specificity, mantras for prosperity, mantras to help, you know, fear, self-confidence, self-love. Like I'm just getting more.
Do you have one right now? You could just say just for fear, one for everyone, just a good mantra for fear if they feel fear.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many. I think one of the very universal mantras that I really love to teach because it's as universal as you can get is a mantra. And the language that I use to teach the mantras is called Sanskrit. It's a thousands of years old ancient Indian language. Sanskrit is like the yoga, not the yoga, the language of the gods.
Wow.
And it was only revealed for the sake of spiritual liberation, wasn't used for common everyday language. And it was also revealed in the ancient texts as hymns and songs as well. So there's a particular mantra that comes from that tradition that I love. And its meaning is, I am love.
Aww.
It's so simple and
it's
beautiful.
It's so simple.
Yeah. Aham, which means I am, and Prema, which means love. And that mantra is Aham Prema.
Say that one more time.
Aham.
Aham.
Prema.
Aham Prema.
Right. So Aham Prema.
Aham Prema.
Right. And that's just a mantra. I find it very good for self-esteem, self-confidence, and of course fear, because fear's opposite is love.
Is love.
So whenever you're in a stressful, contracted self-doubt, and believing yourself to be other than what your true nature is, which is love.
Yeah.
This is a good mantra for that. So it's a very universal mantra that
I love. Let's say it together one more time.
Aham.
Aham.
Prema.
Prema.
A-H-A-M. First word.
Yeah.
Prema. P-R-E-M-A. Aham Prema.
So I hope everyone listening is saying that now.
Yeah.
Out loud. Now, love is the universal frequency?
It is. And in Sanskrit, there's different forms of love. The highest form of love in Sanskrit would be either prema or a word called bhakti, which is universal or unconditional love. So love for all, for creation and in all of its manifestations. Or you could say that love with no conditions or contingencies or strings attached. It's just an innate love that comes from the source of who we are.
Uh-huh.
And it sees itself in the other. You know, there's another Sanskrit word which expresses that as well. And that's namaste.
Namaste.
Which means the light or love within me sees and honors and bows to the light.
Wow.
Yeah. And Sanskrit's full of mantras that kind of express the same, thing, but in all kinds of different ways. And that's why I love it. It's a very colorful practice.
Wow. Well, as you're saying that, I'm like on your vibration. What I just thought of, like, I feel like it's been so long. I'm guessing for you, I have no idea. When was the last time you ever had an angry outburst? Do you have that anymore? Have you seem like, do you used to like, what do you do?
All the emotions. All the emotions pass through. For me, you know, I think it would be, inaccurate to say, well, I'm always in a certain state because we're all.
I just heard you imagine a large anger coming out.
Well,
of
I think the distinction is how long you hold on to stuff.
Wow.
For.
Yes.
That's it all comes up in the human experience, you know, joy, pain, elation, joy, fear, anger, acceptance, it all arises in the human experience. So I never like to give off the feeling that I'm just, you know, kind of like walking around in an elated state all the time, because we have an emotional body and it's important to honor all the different. But again, it's just to me, it's the identification. So there's a noticing when anger arises. And you know what? Sometimes anger is totally appropriate.
Yeah, it is. It's something. Yeah. Know,
it's totally appropriate. I love the story of this great yogic saint named Yogananda.
Yogananda.
Yeah, he wrote a book called Autobiography of a Yogi, one of the great yogic books ever written. Oh. One of his students observed him sort of getting very angry at a student, you know, who had done something. And then at the same time, he seemed to be embroiled in that anger. He just tilted his head a little to the right and sort of smiled and winked at another student, which he was just, so this was an emotion that he was sort of channeling for a purpose.
For a purpose.
But he wasn't completely overtaken by that emotion.
Wow.
Yeah. So sometimes it's like, I call it not anger. I call it like expressing a fierce emotion. You know, like
a fierce emotion.
In my tradition, in the yogic tradition, there's three forms of the feminine goddess, and that is, one is the creative aspect, and her name, you can try saying these names. Okay. Her name is Saraswati.
Saraswati.
Yeah, she's the creative principle.
Love
then
her.
There's the nourishing and sustaining, preserving form of the goddess, and she's Lakshmi.
Oh, Lakshmi.
Yeah. Everybody likes, because she's the goddess of abundance.
Baby.
And then there's the transformative, fierce form of the goddess, and that's Kali.
Kali. And I just bought a candle for her, and I
always tell her she should change her name to Colleen, to Kali, spell it K-A-L-I. And Colleen.
That would be kind of cool.
Then you can manifest, you know, the fierce. So, but
oh yeah.
But so Kali's the fierce form of the goddess,
yeah.
And you know, when she really needs to, you know, express that energy, that's comes forth in her, you know.
So I have,
and that's in all of us.
Yeah, and I have prayed to her a few times, and I've done throughout the years. And the one time I remember, like, and again, she is the goddess of destruction, right? There has to be great destruction for change.
The way I look at it is she takes away what is no longer of service.
Yes. And but that process can be scary. I remember the first time it was just like when I was pregnant and leaving my kid's father at the time, it was just like my whole life sort of was just like, and I was left to rebuild. Only this time I had to do it again, you know, a few years later.
Sure.
And I was much more powerful in her. You know, I mean, not at first, but then I rose with her this time. I knew.
Well, that's what it is. You know, when you realize that that's the energy which it really needs to be harnessed and channeled right now, you can be with it and not resist it and not say, I just want to hold on to the preserving aspect of this. And I see, you know, people that do kind of resist that fierce transformational energy, which is Kali. So my point is that, yeah, sometimes anger comes up. It does. And
do you
asked me when the last time
was. Yeah, when was the last
time? Let me think about that. I'm sure it arose. It'll pop into my head. You can't think of it right now. But,
it'll be after this interview.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Now, it's been 6 months since you've performed live.
I played outdoors. For a yoga class, but
that's
different.
It. Are you missing it? Are you missing the tours? Are you still kind of like, yeah, I feel like that's...
You know, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Like if you could just say, hey, David, poof, you're on a stage playing with your favorite musicians and then having a meal with them afterwards, I'd say, yeah, I'm missing it.
Yeah.
But am I missing the whole package?
Oh, no.
Not really. You know,
but you're open to it coming back if it comes up?
Yeah, in a different way. Pretty much my approach to life is I'm open to anything if it feels aligned. You know,
I love that.
My stock answer is if it happens again and I feel that I want to do it, I will. But if it never comes back, I'm all good. Like I said, I do feel in however many years that was, that I was consistently performing and recording, was probably about 15, but between 15 and 20. I recorded 12 albums and 9 singles and traveled all over the world. And that was just a big chunk of my life's work. So I feel like I listened and I sort of manifested and I feel complete. So if there's another chapter of that particular life, then sure. But I'm not going to repeat it.
You're not going to repeat
it. I don't have it in me.
You don't?
You know, it's amazing when I look at what was coming through me. It's like they said to Bob Dylan, they said, you know, are you still writing? He said, well, you remember all those songs that I write, I can't do that anymore. Because you get this, you know, spirit just gives you this creative energy for a specific purpose. And it feels so effortless. And then when it moves through you and completes, you to kind of to recreate it, it would be totally efforted.
Wow.
Yeah, and I don't have that in me.
And you don't have that in
you? No, I don't. Right now, I also feel like I'm kind of rejuvenating myself. You know, I'm still kind of catching up for all those years being.
Do you have like a particular concert, venue, something that was the most like life-changing for your, just like the vibe, something like that stands out, like not Woodstock, you know what I mean? But it's like one of those that changed me, that performance.
Well, there was a few of them. I mean, when I first started touring and traveling and chanting, it was kind of a little bit of a rarefied niche kind of experience. And it still is to a degree. But over the years, it just exploded. And so I found myself in the beginning chanting for like 20 people. And then eventually these chant festivals started to happen. One in particular was in Joshua Tree, California.
I so want to go there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And suddenly there I was on a stage with like a 12-piece band performing for like, you know, thousands of people. And that was like, oh, wow, this has really, you know, moved into a new level of, you know, mainstream connection in terms of how the chanting came into the world. So it definitely, like, I remember that.
And was everyone chanting with you too?
Oh, yeah. And an extraordinary band, because these festivals would attract all kinds of ensembles. So you would have all these different musicians that I knew from traveling in different parts of the country all there. So I could say, okay, I'm going to have a drummer, I'm going to have a percussionist, I'm going to have two lead guitar players, a bass player, you know, a violin player, four backup vocalists, you know? And so just the power of that experience of chanting with that many people was really quite something. So it definitely changed my life. And it also gave me the opportunity to really, you know, I grew up being a guitar player and a singer-songwriter before I found spiritual music.
You did?
So as a kid, I kind of always wanted to be that person on a stage, you know, being kind of like a rock star.
Wow.
So it was this moment where I was in service to the community.
Spiritual rock star.
In service to the community, but also living out my dream.
Yeah.
And I've never looked at, you know, being a rock star as like an ego thing. I've always thought, you know, it's one of the greatest forms of church there is.
Whew.
Yeah. For me.
Yeah. Especially what you're expressing, what you're giving. I can only imagine all those people that were in your audience with their, what magic you gave them.
Yeah, and what I found too, I call it prayerformance instead of performance.
I love that.
Because what I found was I could simultaneously be transmitting this ancient practice and also enjoying that side of me that is a performer, you know? And so all these aspects of my psyche, you know, a musician, a performer, a spiritual seeker, a healer, it all came together in that world.
Were you nervous switching over from just your normal, like, here I am, I'm an artist, I'm in a band, guitar, whatever, to this sort of spiritual music?
It was very organic. Well,
it always is.
I had let it go for a long time. And when it came back, it was just that whole quantity of energy and creativity and understanding of mantras and writing spiritual songs. As I said, it was a gift that was just given to me, unexpected, but so satisfying. And for all those albums and all those tours, I just felt like it was moving through me. I really don't feel like I can take credit for it, except that I feel like I played my part, you know, like I took it. I took it to task and poured myself into it.
Wow.
So I do feel fulfilled by that.
You're fulfilled. I feel like a lot of people in your life, you've touched a lot of people. In fact, I've had clients just recently met that like either knew, they're like, thank you for introducing me to him through the episode, or they knew you like from the yoga studio, you know, or,
And I'm soon going to take it to another planet, you know?
Yes, you are. What planet?
I'm just making my rounds, you know?
How do you...
The purple planet, of course.
The purple planet.
Yeah, I love green, but I'm almost ready for the purple.
How do you help people know? So I'm sure people have asked you this question. That's why I'm getting this. How do I, if I want to start a life of spirituality, I'm in this sort of glass house or whatever, this end of the road, how do I begin?
A spiritual life?
Yeah, or a spiritual practice. Like, So many people are lost right now. And sure. In a simple words, like, how do I begin? I want this path. I want what David and Colleen are talking about. How do I begin that path? Where do I even start?
You mean other than taking my course, right?
Other than taking your course, you better take that course.
Well, I'm a firm believer in the adage of when the student is ready, the teacher comes. I really believe that. I feel that there's no...
It's the second time I heard that this week, actually,
oh, really?
From another story. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe in that. Asking with all your heart has always been for me the way, you know, hey, here I am. I'm being, there's a gravitational pull to having a more spiritual life. I feel like I've come to the end of the road of maybe seeing life in a narrow box.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to expand. I'm ready to be guided. I'm ready to open. Please, please, universe, divine, God, goddess, consciousness, love, nature, however a person relates to a higher power, just show me the way.
That's and it always is revealed, that's right?
Yeah. And yeah, and just that repeated prayer of saying, this is what I want. This is what I want in my life. I want to have a more spiritual life, and I want to have the resources and the guidance for that. It's always been there for me. The only thing that you just have to be patient with is that divine timing, you know, and also, and not to
so
also impose your ideas on how that's supposed to look. In other words, be more attuned to the feeling of it rather than to the image you have carved in your mind.
Exactly.
Because you never know what the teacher is going to look like. You never know what the teaching is going to look like. So you have to just be open.
Be open.
Be open. And I would say, like, when you get acquainted with the feeling of that heart's desire, then stay closer to the feeling rather than to what your mind does with that. Because I always find that the spiritual impulse is lost in translation in the mind. So there's this very
real, I do that all the time.
Very real, very natural, organic impulse to draw oneself closer to that divine union. The mind has all sorts of ideas about how that's supposed to look, what it's supposed to be, what the time frame is, what's going to be asked of me. It's kind of like what you said, the things that I fear never happen, but the things that I'm not fearing take me by surprise.
Yeah.
So in this case, you know, it's like you're focused on wanting this in your head, but, you know, it's actually, if you just turn your head or let go of that and turn your head here, it's like, aha, oh, there it is.
There it is.
So I always say stay connected to the feeling of one's heart's desire rather than the way the mind tends to lock into what that should be.
Even with like the laws of the universe, working with the laws of attraction, it's so much, and I try to remember that. It's really more not just what I'm writing and saying the vibration, but really what I'm feeling. So I can say something and feel a whole other, and I'm going to get a confused message and get what I don't want.
Right. It's like aligning the mind with the heart. You know, that in the yogic scriptures, it says the mind is a great servant, but a terrible master. So it's like, really get into the vibration of really what your heart is yearning for, and then let the mind follow rather than the mind leading. You know, it's not that we're denying the mind or thoughts or anything like that. It's just getting them aligned with a higher vibration. And really with that, because the mind is often vibrating on a conditioned response. This is what I have learned in the past. So this is what I am looking to repeat, because that's what makes me feel comfortable and safe.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to move through that. Mantras is one of the ways that you can really transform your mind from that habitual way of thinking to opening itself up to something brand new.
Mantras are good. I love mantras. I also like to do extreme things like Kambo ceremony, which you know from the episode before.
What kind of ceremony?
Kambo.
Kambo.
From the ancient frog.
Right.
Kambo.
Absolutely.
Which people listen to this episode, listen to the one before, you hear all about my experience, or sweat lodge ceremony. I love that physical grind when you're like at your bottom and you just are so uncomfortable, because that's how I get through these moments.
Exactly.
In life.
It's almost like, you know, the magic happens when you're not there.
Right.
So whatever helps you get out of the way, it really doesn't matter whether it's sweat lodges or mantras or yoga, you know, or walking on fire coals or,
you
know.
Have you done that? I want to do that.
The guy across the street said, David, you're probably the kind of guy who's walked on fire coals before. Like, no, he goes, I took you for that guy.
I took you for that guy.
No, it's only because we went on a walk and I didn't have any shoes on, you know.
Have you any interest in doing that at all?
Not really.
I do.
I mean, I would, but I'm not.
Apparently, you don't feel it, the burning.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Right? That's right. I know some people that do the firewalking and they just don't feel it. I guess you're just in that, you know, because there's a lot of people
mind
around
over
you.
Matter.
It's just, and it's sort of like that energy.
Very much so.
To to go right past that.
Yeah, you transcend yourself in that moment.
It is amazing to just how powerful the mind is. How do you align the heart with the mind?
Well, again, music, chanting, mantra, nature, and self-inquiry is a big one for me too. Just stepping back, quiet, solitude, and just watching and seeing, you know, one of the big transformations in my life is, you know, shifting from seeing the mind as a tragedy, and more as a comedy, because if you're so invested in your mind and your thoughts, you literally will go crazy. Yeah. So if you can step back and be entertained by the craziness, in the yoga teachings, it's called the monkey mind, because it's jumping from branch to branch, trying to somehow satiate or fulfill itself. So for me, one of the great ways that I get out of that headspace is I just align myself through my practices and really get attuned to who I am. And I step back and I just watch the mind. See, people think when you're completely aligned and locked into that vibration, you believe yourself to be it.
Wow.
You know, it's like an addiction.
Yeah.
Because when you are addicted to something, you can't see yourself as separate from it. So minding, I see, is the foundational addiction that creates all other addictions. So when you can step back and go, okay, there's my mind, and you realize that you are actually not addicted to it, and that it doesn't define you, then everything starts to change.
Well,
it's like you loosen that knot. You
know? I'm a Gemini sun, Virgo moon, and Virgo rising. So I needed to hear that, because that is all that just what goes up here.
Right.
You know, now we're getting to the end of our episode. Oh, okay. Wow. Uh-huh. I know it goes so fast. It always does with you. So I don't know if you remember this. I asked you then. And I always ask these. Sometimes they change, but I always ask these three questions at the end.
Let me get in the space.
Let's get in the space.
Okay.
Okay, so I normally say, and I think I did, if you could go back to a time when you were a kid and you could say something, what would you say? But I want to say, if you could go back to a time of that, of maybe when you were lost in the beginning of lawyer, you know, whatever you want to do, musician, what would you say to yourself?
I would tap on the door of the consciousness of that younger person and I would go, wake up. Because I call that spiritual amnesia. You know, for a certain amount of years, we forget. So I would just say, hey, wake up.
And maybe you did, right? Because there really is no time. Time's illusion. So maybe you want back.
And I had some of those wake up moments, but it would be nice for me to sort of peek out at the older me and just get that little.
And just get that.
That little nudge.
What piece of advice do you want to leave for our listening audience? Right now in this moment, it's currently September 14th, 2020. So you guys already know where we're at 2020. So they'll be listening to this in January.
Sure. I go back to the mantra, aham prema. You are love.
You are love. Yeah. I love that. Now, can we finish out with a little tune? Will
Absolutely.
You take us out with your ukulele with a little tune?
Here's an English mantra and a Sanskrit mantra.
Okay, play it for us.
This is a song I wrote for a musician friend of mine who passed. He was in the hospital, and this was my prayer to him.
Aww.
And it's been a piece that many people have shared with me, has been a prayer for them as well in those times. And
wow.
This is a mantra that celebrates the benevolent, merciful, compassionate, loving nature of the divine.
Oh, I am ready.
Here we go. Be bold, be free, be beautiful, believe, be love, be true to you, as far and wide, remember there's someone who's thinking of you. We're all thinking of you. Shri Krishna Govinda Hare Murare, He Nata Narayana Vasudeva. Shri Krishna Govinda Hare Murare, He Nata Narayana Vasudeva. Twameva Mata Chapita Twameva, Twameva Bandhus Chasaka Twameva. Tvameva Vidya Dravinam Tvameva Tvameva Sarvamama Deva Deva. Be bold, be free, be beautiful, believe, be love, be true to you. As far and wide, remember there's someone who's thinking of you. We're all thinking of you.
Yay! Oh my God, that was amazing. And I think everyone listening, myself included, I know their vibration is a little bit higher, and I felt the prayer, and that was beautiful. I even kind of held back tears a little bit, you know, as I could feel that love and intention you put into that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing your voice. Thank you for sharing again for another episode, season two, all of your wisdom. Please, where can everyone find you? All the sources.
DavidNewmanMusic.com.
.com. Everything is there.
And then they just go there, and there's Spotify and Facebook and Instagram and iTunes and all that.
And what about the class you're currently teaching?
That's under events on my website and on my homepage. It's called Practical Mantra, and it starts on October 4th. It's four consecutive Sundays.
Four consecutive Sundays on Zoom. Yeah. And on Instagram, you're just David Newman Music, right?
David Newman Music. That's correct.
Yeah. Awesome. And follow the show notes because he'll be linked in there and on my Instagram. Thank you, everyone. Again, thank you for making this episode, this season, this whole podcast amazing. If you would like to be on the show, if you have a request, if you just have something you want to say, please email thehairhealerpodcast@yahoo.com. Also, check out the Hair Healer Podcast Facebook page and the Hair Healer 1111 on Instagram. Thank you, everyone. Love you. Thank you, David, again.
Thank you.
Love you. It was amazing.
Always a joy.
Namaste.
Namaste.